Jemele Hill is contributing writer for The Atlantic. She's host of Jemele Hill is Unbothered. It's a podcast on Spotify. We're very pleased to be joined by her. Jemele, thank you so much for joining Richard and myself. I trust you're keeping well. Am I wrong in thinking that I have seen more white athletes, be they pro, be they amateur, sort of step up here in this situation? And if that is the case, if in fact I'm right, why do you think that is? You know, obviously, look, the cause is legit. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we've had other legit causes. I don't remember as many white athletes speaking out about Ferguson. I could be wrong, but I don't. What do you think is specific to this instance?
Well, I don't think you're imagining things. I think it's definitely a increase or influx of white athletes who are speaking out, and not the typical white athletes we usually hear from. Say, you know, Chris Long, not that he's been silent on this either, but to hear from Joe Burrow, the presumed number one pick, to hear from Trevor Lawrence, I think that's the part that's been really surprising for not just myself, but for a lot of people, that there's been a display of allyship in corners where people didn't believe any may have existed. But I think this one registers maybe differently because there's no wiggle room with it. And it pains me to say that, because in every single case that we've seen, be it Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, I mean, I can go down the list of cases that have been very similar, and people have always found something to distract from what we're seeing, or some, but there was no but in this. We all saw it. A man was murdered right in broad daylight by the police. And I think it was just the look on that officer's face, the atrocity taking place, that if you were somebody who was on the fence about this issue somehow, this was not one where you could be on the fence about. It was going to force you in a position, and nobody certainly was going to take the position that George Floyd deserved what happened to him.
Jemele, we're all shaped when it comes to the events that are going on right now in the United States by our own experiences. And so I want to sort of personalize it with you. How often in your life have you been profiled?
Well, the thing is that, you know, where I've been, I think, fortunate is that I haven't been, I've never undergone a situation where I've been profiled by law enforcement. I will say that just in the experiences of friends of mine, family members, just living in this world, that in those interactions where I've had to have with police, it has always gone through my mind about this could end poorly. And it's like, I hate having that fear. And even though those fears have not been, you know, necessarily realized, it's just the fact that I haven't had that fear at all. Now, I've faced profiling in other parts of my life for sure. But the type that we're seeing now, I mean, I think that has not been gratefully something that I've experienced. But it was something that was so much a part of the communities that I grew up in that I didn't even realize until I got out of the bubble of Detroit just how uncommon that experience was. I think I was thinking of, not that I thought white people were dealing with the same level of police antagonism, harassment that people in my community were, but it just had been so normalized that you didn't understand until you stepped outside of it just how truly awful it is to have to deal with this constant presence and threat of violence toward people who just want to be safe.
You know, Jemele, of all the things I heard Friday when this story, I was going to say when it took off, when it really started to be the feature of the news cycle, even in sports, of all the things I heard on Friday, the thing that stuck with me the most was hearing Jalen Rose talk about how you all love black culture. Why don't you start loving black people? And that resonated with me because, I mean, it's so true. You know, there isn't one of us, I don't think, who's, who doesn't go to rush out to see the next thing Spike Lee does, or, you know, rush out in my age, rush out to buy when Stevie Wonder cut a record. Man, I had to have it. I just had to have it. And I was a dumbass white kid living in a town of 3,500 in rural Manitoba. but I loved Stevie, so I had to get that. And it got me thinking, is there a way of showing allyship, and I'm going to use that word allyship, is there a way of showing it without straying into an area of cultural appropriation, you know? Because sometimes I find yes. that does happen. And I'd be interested, not just as an African-American woman, I'd just be interested in your take on that. Like, how do you do it without overdoing it?
So I don't think that Black people have an issue with other people, other races enjoying our culture. The part that we have an issue with is that we see a lot of white people who happily feast on music, Black music, Black movies, Black entertainment, Black athletes. But when those people in those groups I mentioned begin to show themselves as full and complete black people, then they don't want to hear anything else. They just want this limited experience. I'm glad you brought up Spike Lee, because one of the movies I often refer to when I'm engaging in these conversations is Do the Right Thing. And a particular scene, it's the scene that happens in Sal's Pizzeria, where Spike Lee overhears John Turturro using the N-word. And then he asked him, I don't understand why you call us that, but yet on your walls you have all these black people that you seem to like. And he asked him, who's your favorite athlete? Magic Johnson. Who's your favorite? Prince. They're all black people. And he's like, yeah, but they're not really black. And so what I would encourage white people to do is, in your allyship, don't force black people to be invisible in your presence. And by that I mean this. I had a very good conversation with a white friend of mine yesterday, and that's the thing that's been really unique about this as well, is that a lot of my white friends who I've never had these conversations with suddenly are calling me and wanting to have these conversations and wanting to talk. And he has just asked me if he's been a bad friend. And I said, no, you haven't been a bad friend, but do understand that there is a wagering that goes on if you're black and you have a white friendship, where you actively decide to hide parts of your experiences and parts of who you are, not because of your own discomfort, it's because you know it's making the white people uncomfortable. And so I would ask white people that if you really want to engage in true allyship, that means listening, and that means understanding the black experience is not limited to records and movies or sports, okay? That it's a lot that goes on between those three things that has led to why some of us have this perspective in this country. If you have a black friend and you've never had a conversation about race, then you need to question that friendship. This is not to say this is something you have to talk about 24/7, but if your black friend has never told you anything they've gone through, you know, racially, or the experiences that they've had, that means there's something in that dynamic that they're afraid that if they show this part of themselves, that they will be met with rejection or resistance, or it'll become a debate. And that's why a lot of us don't engage in those conversations outside, as we like to say, in mixed company.
That's really well said, Jamel. I appreciate that. During your years at ESPN, you certainly wrote a lot about the NFL. I'm sure you're still doing the same at the Atlantic. It's quite a statement by the National Football League over the weekend regarding what's going on in the United States, giving the large backdrop of Colin Kaepernick. Now, I'll be specific, sort of, you know, people I think like to say the NFL, but it should be specific here. It should be specific to NFL owners. It strikes me, Jamel, as about the height of hypocrisy to sort of proclaim your allyship in this situation when you, just a couple of years ago, blackballed Colin Kaepernick out of the league. I wonder how you have weighed in, or have you weighed in, or what are your thoughts on the NFL's statement over the last couple of days?
It's disgraceful, and it gets to what I was talking about, is that the NFL owners, and I want people to understand this, I've never been against them being involved in social justice issues, by the way, issues they wouldn't even care about if it wasn't for Colin Kaepernick and the pressure that his protest put on them to be involved in these matters. So they want people to give charitably, to do things quieter for their own comfort and for the comfort of some of their fans. And for them to put out this statement, knowing what they've done to Colin Kaepernick, was just disgusting. And I hope people understand that that's what I was just talking to you about allyship, is that, okay, it's one thing to have all these black people employed in your league and to showcase black talent, but as soon as they start talking about some real things they're going through, about what their lives are like, or start connecting to other members of their community in this way and discussing police violence, then they want them to shut up. And so I find their posturing and them doing this to be a slap in the face. I mean, honestly, to not just Colin Kaepernick, but to really all their black fans, because we saw what you did. Everybody saw you ruin somebody's career for a peaceful protest. You know, I've been asked many times over the last few days, as the unrest has spread across America, from many people saying, I don't understand, or how does this help? Well, there was a peaceful protest going on in the NFL, and that cost somebody their career. So whether people are peaceful, whether they are outraged, you don't care either way, because the bottom line is, it was always the message that bothered you. It was never about the method. And as much as they fixated on the method, they just did not want to hear that this was a part of the American identity, which is police brutality. Because in all these statements that are being released by coaches, networks, the NFL, all those kinds of, well, one thing I'm paying very close attention to is the language being used. And what I don't see in there, a lot of these statements, is the word police and the words police brutality. And they express their sorrow and their condolences for the obvious victims of it. But the truth is that many of these leagues, many of these teams, and many of these coaches have relationships with the police in their community, and they're afraid to say something and call this what it is. And so that part, to me, if you're not really here for the uncomfortable part of this, I prefer you keep your statements.
Jamel, one of the things that is true is that athletes have power, and I think much more power than they realize. And we've seen now, in sort of the modern athletic era, the NBA players have shown their power and exhibited their power, and it has impact. It has true impact. As we head forward now over the next couple months, when sports, knock on wood, start to resume, what do you expect is going to happen regarding athletes and being public? You know, it's a little bit of a filibuster here, but one of my dreams used to be that prior to the NCAA football championship or the NCAA basketball championship, a group of athletes would come out, sit on the floor or sit on the field, and basically say, we're not playing until you guys pay us. And, you know, game's not going to start. ESPN, Fox, here's a PayPal account, deposit it in, and we'll collect it when we're done with our eligibility. It never happened, obviously. But, you know, the point is, we're at a moment in time where I think athletes have massive, massive power. And I wonder if you might see them exhibit that over the next couple of months, to the point where they demand that the power structures in their sports change, or at least try to do something to change it.
I mean, I would like to see it, particularly now that, you know, they have an opportunity that if these leagues or teams or whoever, if they don't want to be involved in this conversation and making it better, all they would have to do is really turn all these statements around on them and say, hey, it was just a couple months ago where you were saying this, and now that I want to engage and do something, then you're acting as if, you know, you don't understand, or that there's no room or space to do that now. So I would hope they would understand that, like, a lot of owners, a lot of leagues, a lot of teams, coaches, they're giving them receipts right now that they can use later on down the line. But it's hard to say, because there were a lot of athletes who were outraged about Trayvon. There were a lot of athletes that were outraged about a number of these things. And while, yes, this outrage does feel a little different because it has led to a nationwide kind of rebellion and awakening and a consciousness, there is a part of me that worries that once they get back to the same old comforts, that they'll just resume being comfortable. And so I would like to see them proceed further and put more pressure to leagues. And frankly, I like a lot more of them to do what the University of Minnesota did by deciding to end their relationship with the local police. Now, I know every community is not the same, and that all police forces have not been accused of some of the things that the Minneapolis Police Department has, because it's a long, troubled history there. But there are plenty of teams and cities that have that same history where things have happened. And I like to see them exercise their own muscle in doing so. And because I really feel like the only way the structure of policing is going to change is if people are willing to take this issue head on and to be very explicit and intentional about their actions toward the police. Because we know these unions and police unions are very powerful across the United States. A lot of people don't want to come off as saying anti-police. But if it takes a little bit of that just to make them understand the gravity of what people are tired of, then I think they should do that. I'd love to see that relationship. I'd love to see that be done going forward. But I guess I'm sort of cautiously optimistic. But there's, you know, a part of me that certainly is aware of the fact that once things get back to some semblance of normalcy, that this issue just may be outrage of the moment and may dissipate.